involved in that program. And that's what I understood the program was going to mainly be for, and I think most of us understood it as that. And it kind of got away from us for a while. And but anyway, it's run its course. We're trying to continue to keep it available for those that, you know, that really need it. In this last decade, we've helped quite a few Alaskans meet the requirements of removing, upgrading, closing, and cleaning up underground storage tanks to ensure that we have protected our environment. But what Senate Bill 153 will do, in addition, it phases out the cleanup grants by 2004, because the expectation is, and we'll, I'm sure, hear from the department, that these grants will be accomplished by that time. And finally, it turns the Underground Storage Tank Assistance Fund into a revolving loan fund supported by loan repayments and income earned on the money in the fund. And I'll just note that Annette Kreitzer, who is my finance committee aide, is available if you want to step through in detail and any of the things in this bill. She's available, and we'd be happy to bring her to the table.
For the members' benefit, there is a very good sectional analysis prepared by Senator Lehman's staff in your packet. And if you wish, Ms. Kreitzer can take us through that section by section. We have some people for testimony on this bill, and we'd start off with Mr. Barnett from the Board of Storage Tank Assistance. Mr. Barnett, please restate your name and
morning, Mr. Chairman. Committee, my name is John Barnett. I'm a private sector contractor employed by the Board of Storage Tank Assistance as their executive director. This CS is a very good bill. The changes in here are certainly warranted, and we would urge the Board of Storage Tank Assistance would urge its passage for one simple reason is the fact that this CS, actually the version that came out of resources, had language in there that set who was eligible for a loan based on the federal requirement of self-insurance. Basically, if somebody is self-insurable, they're not allowed to get a loan from the state. And right now, of the people, of the companies that have expressed interest in obtaining a loan from the state, this bill would remove 14 of those applicants off of that list. And those applicants, 13 of those are Chevron corporate-owned facilities. So we would urge passage of this bill for nothing less than to just reduce that loan application list. But I think the changes are good. We really need to be looking at the end of this program. And we do believe, the board believes, and I think the department is in agreement with us, that we can wrap up all the grants by 2004.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Are there any questions of Mr. Barnett? Thank you. Oh, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask how many applications have been, how many applications do you have on the, that are being considered at this point, and how recent have they been submitted?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, for the loan program, we've got several people that are just starting the process. We've only received four completed applications for the loan program, but we do have 57 that had expressed interest on top of that, that they would be applying for a loan. In order to get the loan, they have to have an approved work plan from the department as to the tasks that they're going to undertake to do the cleanup. So, but we suspect that'll probably be around 40 to 45 applicants. And the loans could reach as high as $250,000, depending upon the size of the cleanup, the level of contamination at the site.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering, under the revolving loan program that's anticipated under this piece of legislation, how much would be made available annually that you anticipate?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the amount of funds available will be dictated upon, of course, the number of applications and the amount of money currently in the fund. We have sufficient funds available in the Storage Tank Assistance Fund that would roll over into this revolving loan fund to handle all of our initial expected needs anyway for that, unless we have some sort of site that turns out to be very, very contaminated. On these loans, we don't give out a lump sum loan for a cleanup. Let's say a cleanup is estimated to cost $300,000. We would not give them a $300,000 loan. We phase that loan over time so that the results can come in from the work so we don't end up overpaying to a site. And sometimes the estimates are pretty high, and the cleanups will come in a lot lower. due to basically technology improvements and such like that.
But under, Mr. Chairman, but under revolving loans, you lend out so much money and then you anticipate the returns of those loans that will give you usually an estimated amount of funds that are available to reissue under the revolving door. So it would seem that you would have some idea of what that amount might be on an annual basis.
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have those figures, but Larry Deacon from the department might be able to give you a better idea for that, if you'd like him to come up.
Mr. Dietrich, could you come forward, please?
Mr. Chairman,
please restate your name and
clarification.
Excuse me?
I was just thinking for clarification, Senator Hoffman, were you asking about the second wave or the next wave after this initial batch? What can be expected as being,
under the revolving loan program once it's established?
Right. Mr. Dietrich, do you understand the question?
Yes, I believe so, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, for the record, my name is Larry Dietrich. I'm the director of the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Senator Huffman, through the chair. The initial capitalization was done at the rate of $5 million when SB 128 originally passed in FY. And so we're working off of that balance currently. The loan survey sheet that we sent out, as John indicated, provided for 57 who are interested, but we only have four in the door. Doing our projections with the amount available for both the loans and the grant, which is the total amount that's in the storage tank assistance fund, we should have an anticipated balance left at the end of FY02 of about $3.4 million. And projecting then completion of the cleanup grants in FY03 is proposed in the committee substitute. Deducting that from the that 3.4 balance, we would expect then when the revolving loan fund fully kicks in all by itself, at the end of FY03, there'll be about a balance of $2.1 million available. The rate of return then, we just don't have experience yet with just four applications in the door. We're working with the Division of Insurance then on the payment plans to see what that return will be. And quite frankly, we just are not far enough down the path yet to see what the return rate will be and the terms of the loans and how long, what kind of terms people will prefer and what they will be given. But at least starting out into the program now, I believe we are adequately capitalized to get started and then see what that trend will be.
Mr. Barnett.
Senator Kelly, Senator Hoffman, the one problem we have is that as some of the applications that will be coming in will be coming in from people that are involved in the grant program that are reaching their cap. As if they have a site that's quite contaminated and they have a problem and that is more than what the grants can cover, they will have to come for a loan and then pay it back themselves. And we don't, as we approach over the next couple of years near the sunset of the grant program, we will then have a better feel of the level of interest in the loan program. So it's right now it's kind of hard to gauge.
Mr. Dietrich, you were just going to respond to the question, so you didn't really have a testimony to make here, did you?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? What I want to do with this bill, we got it fairly late, not by any fault of the sponsor. It was just the way it was, and I'd like to keep it in committee a little while longer so that the committee members can take a peek at it and make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So we'll be holding this in committee, and I will probably bring it up at the next earliest opportunity. Mr. Barnett, you don't come into town for this. You're here, aren't you?
Yes. Senator Kelly, I live in Douglas.
Okay.
People's Republic of Douglas.
And so, Mr. Dietrich, we'll probably call you back if there are any questions. At this point, I'd like to set this bill aside if there is no objection with the committee. Okay. And we'll take it up quite soon. Thank you. Last year, we talked about community housing loans in SB 181, and there was some rather lively debate about this bill at the time, and I think we actually brought it up twice. And it was my intention, I held the bill, and it was my intention to get the parties who disagreed on to come to agreement. This bill that is before us, I don't think necessarily represents any agreement, but I wanted to bring it up and discuss it. I wanted to give Alaska Housing a chance to fully address this bill and let the committee know exactly the impacts as they see it, and give Senator Donnelly a chance to refute those impacts. And then and we'll decide what to do after we kind of figure those things out. So, Senator Donnelly, if you would present your bill, SB 181 is before us.
Yeah. Senate Bill 181 would eliminate the so-called HAF program, which is a statutory loan program that was designed to address what at the time was higher costs in small communities for housing construction. The program adopts a 1% below market rates statutory rate. September 2000 legislative audit, which members have in their packets, recommended the elimination of the program. For all the reasons included in the audit. First of all, it's not based on need, the existing program. There were loans for as much as $400,000 made over the last several years.
Thank you.
It's not based on any assessment of actual costs in those areas to build things. It's just an arbitrary population level of whether a community is under 6,500. And in fact, it may be a low-cost area to have housing, but the loan would still apply. It's not limited to residences. It also includes apartment complexes. It's not limited to people that are low income or can't afford to pay. There's no particular limit on how big a house somebody can build. And frankly, it's highly unfairly discriminatory based on an arbitrary population amount that doesn't make any logical sense. Additionally, it's been cited by the Alaska Boundary Commission, and there's a copy of their 99 report, as a disincentive to the formation of local government, which is one of our constitutional directions in the state, that all states should be formed into some sort of local government and be as much as possible unified governments. And it is a inhibiting factor to that, because in some places in Alaska, people on one side of the street that aren't in a community of 6,500 politically get a 1% discount on their building loan. The people on the other side of the street that happen to be in a community that's over 6,500 don't get it. Obviously illogical and not good public policy, and the loss of the loan by organizing or expanding organization has been a cited factor in people deciding not to join communities or organize themselves. So there's a lot of good public policy reasons why this program no longer fits the needs of Alaska. Additionally, the audit said that there were alternative programs available for in these areas for folks who truly had needs. A list of those programs includes the Rural Enhancement Loan Program, which is on very small communities with less than 1,400, and whose loan income, there's low income borrowers whose income is less than 115% of the median for the area. They can get interest rate reductions of 1-3%, depending on family median income. There's the interest rate reduction for low income borrowers, whose income is less than 100% of the median for the area, and there's additional interest rate reductions are available there. And there's the energy efficiency interest rate, and there's two other. There's the first-time home buyers tax exemption, the rate, which for the past 2 years the interest rate has been lower than the HAF program, 1% discount. And there's the veterans programs, which are equal or less than the HAF program also. So for the truly needy in those communities, there are existing programs already, and multiple programs. And the audit recommended elimination of the program because of that. So that's the reason the bill was put in. I'm willing to continue, there there hadn't been any specific suggestions for modifications of it, but we did work on a committee substitute over the interim that turned it into more of a needs-based program, identified that it would only apply to communities that actually had high housing costs and only for folks who were below 2 times the poverty level, and also that it would only apply to single-family homes and duplexes. So that would turn it into a much more public policy-directed loan program where it actually made some sense going to people who needed it rather than people who were building large complexes or $1,000 houses. And also would probably reduce the disincentive for organization and formation and unification of local governments. That would, I think, be a very important goal for the long-range benefit of the state. So with that, it kind of explains where the committee substitute proposal. I didn't expect it to be adopted today. It's a pretty complex issue. I was hoping the committee would just kind of refresh our memories about this issue, encourage more public comment, and see if this proposed CS is possibly a way to go. So I wasn't going to put a motion to adopt the CS before us today, unless there was some sort of consensus, but to think about it some more as we go along. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So you don't at this time want to move the
commission? No, I would like to hear from Alaska Housing and continue to work on it if there's, you know. Yeah.
Senator Ward, I think you were next, and then Senator Lehman and Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This particular bill, since I'm a licensed real estate agent, as well as my son-in-law works in Alaska Housing, I think, for this department, and it certainly affects all of the Kenai Peninsula, which I represent, and I've had a lot of response about this. I appreciate the fact that the sponsor has moved the committee substitute and is going to give time for the other committee members to discuss this with them. I certainly don't rule the concept of tightening this up whatsoever out of hand, but I do appreciate we're going to have some time to work on this because there's a great deal of concern, at least from the industry of real estate on the peninsula. But I would bring one thing to everybody's attention. Not everybody, like the people in this room, own houses. A lot of people have to live in apartments for one reason or another. So. This is a reality in my district. Not that you want to live in Alaska in an apartment, but for whatever reason, some people choose to, and some people financially have to. So I do want to discuss this with you as we go along, and also the other direction of raising the population cap to maybe reach in and grab part of Spinard.
you're encroaching my area now.
Oh, that's right, redistricting. Sorry. I get confused. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You may have to worry about Senator Lehman off in Akiak or something like that. Let's see. Senator Hoffman was next. Senator Hoffman, please.
Yes. In your sponsor statement, item number 2, you did not mention that, and I wonder, does that apply to the committee substitute where you anticipate that by eliminating the HAF program, we will see $500,000 a year in additional earnings at the AHFC.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Donnelly.
First of all, I'd put a caveat in here. AHFC disputes that there would be savings because their allegation or position is that the number of the loans would go down so that the savings they might even have a reduced revenue at AHFC if enough loans were not made. Of course, the audit shows that there's loan programs out there to fill this need, and it's hard to believe, that they can't be competitive on their own to, be competitive for reasonable loans without having a statutory 1% reduction mandate on an arbitrary program like this that's highly discriminatory towards some Alaskans. So, first of all, I'd say that it was projected based on how much money the state is not receiving because it's charging a below-market interest rate for these loans. So it could there could be a factor there where possibly if people don't go get the loans, well, then there'd be less revenue. And it's certainly, it's just not clear how much loans. I think HFC would have some their own opinion about how much that would be. So that number was based on the amount of the subsidy that would no longer be there if the loan program.
I think clearly Senator Donnelly has stated in the past, and I think this goes to the heart of the argument, Senator Donnelly thinks this will actually result in a small net increase, and Alaska Housing believes it will has the potential of resulting in a large net decrease, and that's the argument. So I guess, Senator Wilken, you're next.
I'll wait till after testimony.
Okay. Ms. Davidson from Ledge Audit.
Senator Olson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Chairman, I'm sorry. I'd like to ask the sponsor, is there anybody in the private sector that is taking a stand on this particular bill, whether they're for it or against it? For example, are the bankers, we've all heard from a real estate person, at least that representative from that area, people from the private sector backing the bill?
Senator Donnelly.
I can't speak for the entire private sector, Senator Olson. I would imagine that people who were planning on making large loans, you know, borrowing lots of money, you know, like $400,000 loan, like one of them that HFC gave out with this subsidy, which, by the way, was a subsidy rate over the life of loan of about $100,000. So anybody who is thinking about buying, you know, like a $500,000 house or anything over, you know, $200,000 would probably not want this program to go away if you lived in a small community, you know, less than 6,500, because it could mean just on an average home could be over life alone about a $40,000 gift or, you know, amount of money you wouldn't have to pay if you were in the normal marketplace.
That's the borrower. I'm talking about somebody from the private sector that's in business. I don't understand. Are they for it or against the bill? The banker. For example, my banker looks at this bill, he said, yes, I'm completely against the bill because I have a better program. Chairman?
I couldn't answer that. I hope we have public testimony from both sectors.
Senator Osborne's next, but I think Senator Ward has something at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would say that right now they probably are, bankers tend to adapt to whatever programs are available. And just like guaranteed finance or guaranteed loans from ADA, which have to be put through the bank to begin with to work, they'll work with whatever we give them. This is not the only program in Dan Cuddy's bank or, you know.
Senator Osterman?
My question dealt with the dispute, so to speak, between the senator and ASFC over what's saved and what is not saved. And Senator, you indicated that the legislative audit specifies in here that it does save dollars for.
No, I didn't say that. I said the audit recommended the elimination of the program because of those reasons that specifically gave, that other programs were available to serve the truly needy folks in these areas already, that the program, you know, is a disincentive to organizing local government, that it's discriminatory, unfairly discriminatory, because it's an arbitrary cutoff not based on any public policy call, because it's not based on the actual cost of construction in the area, nor on the income level of the individuals that are receiving the money, nor on any public need for specific housing in a particular area. So there's no public policy reason, good public policy reason, to continue the program. And at the same time, it's doing public policy damage in preventing organization. And, of course, anytime you have this kind of unfair discrimination, it's not a good thing for government to go around saying to some of your citizens who might be millionaires, here's a 1% discount on your loan, or other people who are just average citizens but don't happen to live in a community that's more than 6,500, you got to pay for full market rate. That just doesn't make any sense.
Just so I clarify my own mind, my notes from last year when we had this says that there's according to AHFC, there's a $19 million net in increased loss if we did this. And I was just trying to get the difference between what you're saying and they're saying. And really what you're saying is that by eliminating the program and using the funds that are there, there's a savings. They're saying that by eliminating the program, there's a net loss of $19 million.
And I think
close to being what we're saying?
Senator Donnelly.
Well, first of all, what I'm saying is that if you charge the full market rate for these loans, you would gain, you'd have revenue of additional $500,000. If everything stayed the same, you charge the market rate, the state would be getting $500,000 a year more in revenue, at least AHFC would. And that would help us maintain the dividend we currently take from AHFC, which they're suggesting that they're not going to pay the full $103 this year. They're saying they only want to pay $96 to the citizens of the state as a dividend of their operations. I have to wonder how much of that net was lost from advertising expenses. But so that my point was to keep their revenue up so that we could continue to maintain a high dividend level, a higher dividend level, to help reduce the fiscal gap. But AHFC is saying that if you take away the 1% discount, well, then people aren't going to use this loan program, and then you're going to lose revenue. But the audit says there's other programs they could go to and use if they didn't use this program. So I think it's really, I don't even think AHFC would suggest there'd be a total loss of the entire amount of net revenue from this program. Maybe they're going to come up here and say that. I'd be surprised, because they have other loan programs people could turn to. But if they did, that's what the argument's about.
To the audit, if I could just interject one thing. To the audit, the auditor, and I don't mean to speak for you, Ms. Davidson, you're going to get your chance here in a second to clarify what I say, but the auditor is saying there are programs available. AHFC is saying, yes, there are programs available, and people may and probably will opt to choose them. And when they do, we will lose money. And we're not talking about AHFC necessarily competing with private industry. They're competing with other quasi-governmental industries in these areas, and they're going head-to-head with them. And they're agreeing with the auditor that the auditor says, yeah, there's other programs available. They're just not ours. And that's where the net loss comes from. Thank you. Senator Osterman.
And I'm still having a problem with the net loss of $19 million here and the gain of $500,000 over here. And I don't see the balance. Is there somebody from Ledge Finance that can compare this for us a little bit better so that we can have a better understanding of the two different theories? To me, two different theories going on here that I just can't balance in my own brain.
I see. Is it Amanda? It's Amanda, yes.
And we don't have to have it today. They don't. You know, they can look at it.
Could you just make a note, please, to do a little analysis on this and get back with... particularly Senator Osterman, but my office and other members of the committee. If I could not, Senator Hoffman, did you raise your hand? Do you want to do it in the context of the auditor being up here?
On the point that he's making, and Dave is saying, that there's other programs available. There may be other programs available, but many people have fixed incomes, and what probably will happen is if they have to pay a higher percentage, they'll build a smaller home, they'll borrow less money, and there's probably the same amount of income, and that same amount of income that they're getting may go to Fannie Mae, may go to other programs, and we're defeating the purpose of trying to get more income, because that would potentially reduce the amount of income that AHFC has, and therefore have an impact on the dividend that we're receiving. Because, you know, most people, when they're going to buy a home, they're saying, well, this is how much money I have available for a mortgage. Now, what can I use that for? And under the program, you know, I think that they'll end up building smaller homes and borrowing less money. And you're not going to see that savings.
You have better explained the point I was trying to make. I think you're right. I don't know if you're right, but do you want Ms. Davidson up here? Well,
oh, sure, but
why don't we get her up here?
From a public policy view, and Senator Hoffman's, you know, argument may be correct, but even if it is correct, from a public policy view, that would argue for no limitation on the size of these communities. Because if it's based on just how much money we're making off this program, we shouldn't discriminate and only give this benefit to certain Alaskans. We should give it to all Alaskans and make more money off the program. So, I mean, you should just take off the population cap if that argument is accurate. And I'm not saying it's not, but the natural consistency of that would be to remove this population level cap, because it bears no public policy connection to the goals that were enumerated for this program originally, and it also doesn't bear any connection to the argument that this is an income producer for the state.
Senator Donnelly, I'm trying to kind of get the argument clear in my mind, but I think the public policy issue that Alaska Housing is espousing, and I think Senator Hoffman is espousing, is that the public policy issue is that AHFC will be able to make more money. And you're saying, yes, they should do it throughout their portfolio, but that isn't necessary. I mean, they're making a business decision here, and they can make more money this way than they can the other way by cutting rates across the board. They can, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac can compete with them in the larger communities. They can compete head-to-head with them. They're saying they can't beat Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And they've reached kind of a market equilibrium. I'm getting out of my area of expertise, and I'll save that for Alaska Housing. Senator Hoffman?
Yeah, just a couple of points, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think that everyone can acknowledge that construction of homes in rural Alaska is substantially higher than in Anchorage. So if you're talking about wanting a three-bedroom home in rural Alaska and you want a three-bedroom home in Anchorage, it's going to cost more. And if you want to try to make the playing field level so that people are getting, can afford equal homes, then the 1% makes more sense because the construction cost is going to be higher, but then potentially we can end up with the same square footage in homes. So I think that that makes some sense. The other point that I'd like to make, and Dan Foskey probably could talk to this.
Senator Hoffman, I would say not only the same square footage, but insulation value and those kinds of things that can actually impact PCE and other things as well, too.
That's exactly correct, Mr. Chairman. And the other point that I'd like to make out is that there's available to Anchorage, there's a tax-exempt first-time home buyers program that basically rural Alaska does not participate in. And Anchorage benefits by this program. They take up approximately 65% of those loans, Anchorage alone, which amounts to a little under $240 million last year. And the rural programs are under $200,000. So, you know, there are certain programs that are available that are more adaptable to rural Alaska, and there's other programs that are more adaptable to Anchorage.
Senator Hoffman, the first-time home buyer program is not available in rural Alaska?
It is available to Alaska, to all areas of the state, but for the, you know, I think that Dan Foskey can explain it better, but it's more adaptable or more suitable for communities like Anchorage.
We'll ask Mr. Foskey when he gets up here. Senator Donnelly, were you going to respond to that?
I was just going to say, I recognize that there's higher construction costs in some areas of the state, but this statute doesn't recognize that. This statute makes an arbitrary cutoff about whether or not these areas are lower construction costs or higher. And I would support legislation or public policy that was limited to those areas where there were higher construction costs, because that makes some public policy sense. But the way the law is now, it doesn't make any sense.
Jessica? Senator Ward, I think you were next, and then Senator Lehman.
I'll be very briefly. Senator Donnelly made my point, made the point that I was going to. I have moved from Anchorage to Nikiski, and I guarantee you that the house there and the house that I'm going to, the new one I'm building, is going to cost a third of what it costs in Anchorage, and it comes under this program. I have every intention of also getting the 1% if it's still there, because it'd be crazy not to. But the building cost in that area is a lot less than it is in Anchorage, and I think it's mostly to do with the paying of the improvements in the ground itself. But it does not cost as much to build where this program is as compared to where I came from in South Anchorage. I mean, it's a quarter of $1 million for a three-bedroom house there. It's very expensive. But Senator Donnelly's correct, and I'm not quite what the adjustment is, but thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lehman and then Senator Wilken.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was going to be my point. I was going to ask the question of Senator Hoffman. I believe that the construction costs are higher in many areas of rural Alaska, but have you, that's just one element of the cost of a home. We have the cost of the property, and have we done some analysis of the cost of property in some of those rural areas versus a cost in, let's say, Anchorage, and how does that then impact the total cost of a construction project?
Well, you know, I guess I could give my insight into Bethel area. An average lot cost $30,000, but with that, you have no water and sewer. Many of them, you have to build your own roads, and there's many other factors involved. The home that I live in, Bethel, for two people, I pay in excess of $250 a month for water and sewer, you know, and because there is no running water and sewer in that home. So when you're looking at construction costs, you have to look at some of the services that are available in Anchorage that might be part of the cost of the development of that lot and that home, and those services don't exist in many places in rural Alaska.
Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the bill sponsor, Senator Donnelly, last year, I was looking here in my notes, we had concern about this program being used for 20-person apartments that were obviously income-producing apartments. Does your new bill that we just saw this morning, does that bring that down to a more acceptable level?
Yeah, the committee substitute that's in your packets here, which I haven't moved yet because I really wanted to have some discussion about this before we did anything specific, would limit it to single-family residences and duplexes that are owner-occupied. So single and, you know, owner-occupied.
Thank you.
Ms. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Davidson. I'm the legislative auditor. We were asked to do an audit on the housing assistance loan fund. What we did is we went back to the original purposes of the loan fund, and what we found is that over the course of time, primarily except for the high cost of construction, the other barriers to home ownership in small communities have been dealt with in other areas. What we did is then take a look at the actual loan portfolio and do a distribution. It's actually in the report on pages 8 and 9, and we show the distribution of the loans that are by geographic location overlaid with the actual construction indexed on Anchorage as 100%. Then we also took a look at the median income in each of the regions and the average borrower's income. And combined, what we saw was the bulk of the program was not going to areas of high construction, and it was going to borrowers that had a higher than the median income for that area. And because of those, our recommendation was either to modify the program and focus it in on those, on the remaining barrier to home ownership, or eliminate the program. We did not look at the impact of the revenue stream to AHFC, comparing mortgages made through this program versus what the next best alternative, investment alternative for those funds were.
Any questions of Ms. Davidson? Thank you. If you could just stay in the facilities or committee room so we can ask you further questions. Mr. Foskey and Mr. Bittner, could you come up and present your testimony, please? Senator Wilken.
Thank you. Before he sits down, Pat, would you look on page 8 of your audit? Would you just take one of those bars and explain what that graph says to us?
Chair, Senator Wilken, what we're looking at is a distribution of the actual loan portfolio across geographic regions of the state. The lighter colored bar, it represents the average cost to build in relationship to Anchorage. For example, in Juneau, the cost to build is 89% of what it would be in Anchorage, and Juneau has 0% of the loans. The next one, Southeast Region, the cost to build is at 95% of Anchorage, and it has 31% of the loan portfolio. And so what we saw is really in the bottom two or three areas where you have your Northern Region, which is 145% cost to build, and they have 10% of the loan portfolio.
Thank you.
We'll call just a momentary at ease.